Welcome to Breaking Free Podcast, your recovery, your way. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Liv. You're in the right place if you want to explore what it means to be in recovery, to challenge the things that keep us small, and to learn how to thrive independently.
Together we are breaking free. Just a quick reminder that while I'm a nurse and a coach, and Liv is a coach, recovery advocate, and a writer, we are not doctors. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you need to, please, please see a doctor.
The Alana Club of Portland is proud to sponsor the Breaking Free podcast. Your recovery, your way, is at the heart of our approach to recovery support services.
Unity Recovery, an inclusive recovery community organization serving all of Philadelphia, is proud to support the Breaking Free podcast. Recovery is possible. Find your path to break free.
Hello, everybody. Today we are talking about shame. So this is such an important topic because I really believe that shame is at the core of a lot of the challenges that we face when we are struggling in recovery and trying to find our way, away from substance abuse, away from disordered eating, away from, disordered relationships or maladaptive relationships. And for me personally, working through my shame was one of the most freeing things that I, have ever done. I still, of course, have some shame. That's a, normal human thing. But being intentional and focusing on my shame and acknowledging it has been just incredible for me. So I'd love to hear from Liv. What is this topic? Why does it feel important to you?
I think it's important because, from an access to recovery perspective, shame is one of the main reasons why people don't access treatment. The shame and stigma around getting treatment, and we know that less than 10% of people with substance use disorder actually get treatment.
Yeah.
Because people are concerned about what people think of them. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we've been talking about diet culture so much, and I was writing that article yesterday about diet culture and shame being, you gave me a quote that said shame is at the heart of what a lot of us deal with around body image and the obsession that we have around bodies. And I think you're absolutely right. We believe that we're so focused because of diet culture on how we appear. We are obsessed with what other people think about us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think culturally we have really built up. Well, first of all, I want to say we'll put that article in the show notes. I haven't read it yet. I'm so excited to read it. And I think that I think there's reasons for it culturally, right? Like we want to fit in and being part of the pack, that is kind of a survival mechanism. But it's really interesting. I feel like today things have shifted so much because of social media and because of, like you've said, the discovery that shame is actually really preventing people from accessing treatment, accessing support. It's preventing people from being from feeling okay, right? And we're having more of an awareness around it, but also I think at the same time there's kind of this dichotomy where it's actually getting worse while we're also having an increased awareness in it. So it's so interesting.
Yeah, because that's the process of recovery, isn't it? That feelings become more intense as we strip away the layers through that process of recovery. And it's really uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to sit with, we remove the anesthetic and we're like, oh, this is what I'm left with. Mm. And, it's like the journey inward in some ways, isn't it? Like for me, it was, oh my gosh, like I feel like physically felt incredibly unwell. Mm. And then, felt like I was inhabiting a bigger body than I wanted to live in.
Mm.
And, you can't help but be faced with the consequences of substance use disorder.
Mm.
When you find recovery and then there's that awareness of thoughts and feelings and shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so much shame.
Yeah, I feel like the avoidance of shame is it's so interesting because it's such a natural reaction to it, but yet we it's so harmful to avoid it, right? And when we dive into it, it's painful, but it's so cathartic and it's so healing. So it's really interesting how strongly avoidant we can be of it, right? Especially.
Yeah, because I think the reaction to shame, now that I actually think about it, the reaction to feeling shame is shame. Right?
Further shame, yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you know, yeah. Because you've identified that in me more than I've seen it in myself.
Mm.
And the way that you've done it is in such a compassionate way that it's helped me to not feel shame.
Mm.
And I think that might be an important point, that when we're raising awareness around this is to consider, who are we sharing this with, and is it in a safe environment, and what kind of support do we have?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's a good segue. We wanted to bring up Dr. Brené Brown. Her work around shame has been really powerful for a lot of people, and for me in particular. I read all the books, and when I read, it's the one about Me Too, you know?
Yeah.
Why can't I think of the title? Well, anyway, they'll all be in the show notes, obviously. And
doing greatly.
No, it's actually one of the first ones. Like, I'm gonna have to.
The Gifts of Imperfection.
No, it's even before that. It's like I read all these other ones, and then I went back. Yeah, I know, mind blowing. But I went back and found, you know, all her past books when I first read. I think Gifts of Imperfection was the first one that I read, and it was so beautiful to me because that idea of like hustling for your worth was definitely something that I. So the title is, I thought it was just me, but it isn't, right? And so
I've not read that one.
Oh, so good. I think I have it upstairs. Anyway, so we're recording this in my basement, folks.
We have a studio now.
We do. We have like a little sound booth. Feels fancy, yeah, but we're really just in the basement of my house. So Brené Brown talks about the difference between guilt and shame as being, you know, guilt is like I did something bad, and shame is I am bad, right? Mm. And according to Dr. Brown, it's shame is the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing we are flawed and therefore unworthy of acceptance and belonging. Shame creates fear, blame, and disconnect. And so, you know, I was looking at this blog that talks about, it's the Habits for Wellbeing blog, and this will be in the show notes. Shame has been associated with depression, grief, anxiety, eating disorders, addiction, and violence. And so it's really interesting to look at that association because I think for me, that's definitely been true. You know, I definitely struggled with depression. I just struggled with grief, which I didn't even realize, and in fact sometimes I still am not recognizing the process of like grief in recovery and how it becomes a piece of your recovery. You have to be able to grieve for all of the things that happened.
We should have an episode on
grief. Ooh, that's a good idea. Yeah. So all of the things that happened and, you know, kind of a loss of your former, you know, the idea of your former self and letting go of who you thought you were or who you thought you wanted
to
be.
We're only a couple of weeks apart in our birthday. But there's the grief. I have grieved the loss of my 20s and
30s.
Substance use disorder. And actually, you know, like when I think about those big milestones in my life, you know, that you're expected to achieve, societal expectations of, you know, family, house, you know, monetary expectations, and relational too. You know, I get envious, especially when I look at my siblings. I'm like, damn it, you know, you have a child and you're married and, you know, I approach 40, but I have a dog child.
She's the most child dog ever. She's really cute.
Anyway, so shame.
Yeah, so it's associated with all of these, you know, really serious challenges and, you know, challenges that really affect our health. And I think it's really important to recognize how significant shame is and how it does affect our well-being. And it also affects the well-being of our, you know, of our community as a whole. So Yeah, so I did a little more digging, and I found another article in the British Medical Journal. And it's a bit wordy, but I wanted to pull out some of the key points here. So stick with me. So despite shame being recognized as a powerful force in the clinical encounter, it is under-acknowledged, under-researched, and under-theorized in the context of health and medicine. So, you know, basically we're not acknowledging or recognizing or validating this, you know, this how harmful this force is on our health. And in the paper, they look into a couple of different claims. And the first is that emotional or affective states, in particular shame, can have a significant impact on health, illness, and health-related behaviors. And then there's four possible processes through that that might have that occur. So acute shame avoidance behavior. So that's kind of like the numbing out or wanting to, like I was talking about, the, you know, trying to get away from it. Chronic shame health-related behavior. So if you're having chronic shame, you know, that disconnection and how it actually impacts your health. Stigma and social status threat. So like you were talking about, you know, not being able to access treatment, mm-hmm. these things, but also being, you know, disconnected from your peers, not having that, because that is an indicator of health, actually having positive connections in your life, social connections.
Yeah.
And then the last one is biological mechanisms. So the piece about, you know, how is this affecting, like, are we getting into fight or flight? Are we constantly in the stress response because we have this shame? And what happens is that our shame, our kind of wiring, our false beliefs and our wiring gets triggered. And then we, you know, just by one little thing, like body image, it might be, you know, you put on your pants and they were a little tight, right? Or you were in a picture next to a tiny friend and you were like, oh, you know, I look large, right? Or even like I ate some Cheetos, whatever it is. With substance use, it could be, you know, what are people going to think of me, right? Like I drank too much. Or it might be that you're in recovery. And, you know, for me, it was I worked at the hospital. And I always felt a little bit of shame around my substance use disorder, even though I was already in recovery, anytime I had to deal with narcotics. Because you have to have another nurse come. Okay. And I always felt like if they knew,
they wouldn't trust you.
What would they think? Yeah, they wouldn't trust me.
Oh.
And it's so interesting. For years I had that. And then after a while I became a case manager. I didn't deal with narcotics anymore. But it was an interesting, like, I didn't feel that people would trust mm-hmm. me. So I felt like I had to keep that piece of me hidden. So that would mm-hmm. trigger this, like, wiring, right? And it would put me in a little bit of a shame spiral.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which then puts you into kind of this fight or flight, this disconnection, all of these things. So there is a biological response that happens as well.
Hmm.
It's really
fascinating.
Yeah, so then they go on to just say that shame's influence is insidious, pervasive, and pernicious, and it's so critical to clinical and political discourse around health that it's imperative to really recognize and start to research and start to validate its impact on our health as an individual and, you know, our social kind of community health, right? So I thought this was really interesting. That
I think that is really interesting, especially in the British Medical Journal, because
they're British.
They're British. And, you know, I come from a family of doctors in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is this tendency among British culture to be emotionally repressed or, you know, to not acknowledge how we think and feel and push it down. And, you know, the common phrase is to push it under the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. You know, the BMJ was always on our coffee table at home.
And here it is, folks.
And that's really interesting. I wonder how that information was received in my household.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, you know, Brené Brown talks about nobody wants to speak about shame. And so even if it's being published in a reputable, you know, medical journal, people aren't talking about it. Nobody talks about it when you go to the doctor, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's talking about it. I mean, in therapy, hopefully they're talking about it. But in other areas, no way.
And I think, and this is a supposition, I guess. You know, I would imagine that for a lot of doctors, they need to see, and this, you know, this has come from some experience, that they really need to see some actual clinical results of shame. And I wonder if it, you know, like with the ACE study, you know, is it taking a while for doctors to actually acknowledge, well, you know, autoimmune conditions, for example, you know, comparing it to shame, mm-hmm. oh, autoimmune conditions, we don't know why they occur, and now to think, oh, well, there's actually a basis in trauma or emotional regulation.
Definitely an increased risk of, there. Right. I mean, that's already documented, that there's an increased risk of developing an autoimmune condition or a chronic health condition if you have, you know, an increase in childhood, adverse childhood experiences.
But doctors don't acknowledge it.
No, they don't tell you that when you get diagnosed.
And what's really interesting, I don't know if you saw this week in the news, that Nadine Burke, it has, she wrote this amazing book. She, I believe, is a governor in California. She's a doctor and an MD. And she wrote a book called The Deepest Well. And it's about the ACE study. And it's about her experience of learning about the ACE study and how it has not been as adopted as it should have been, given its findings. And she's now recommended, it was in the news this week, that all children are screened for signs of ACEs.
Nice. That's beautiful. Let's ring a bell for that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because Lynn Maddy, when we had that episode with her on trauma and the ACE study, she talked about that in her own personal experience, having fairly recently been trained as a you know, counselor, that she wasn't taught about this in school. And so, yeah. So I'm going to put her that book. A link to that book in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and I was wrong. She's actually the Surgeon General of California.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
What an incredible...
Nadine Burke Harris.
What an incredible use of her position of power, right? And her leadership skills clearly are showing in how she is validating the significance of this and making it a priority and trying to bring it into the public eye.
Yeah, and I think she did that because... she worked specifically in marginalized and oppressed communities in San Francisco.
So she was seeing the effect of
health inequalities. It's an incredible book.
Social determinants of health is also a really interesting thing to look into. And it sounds like she was experiencing like some of that and how.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she used this example in her book of a child who, for his age, was not developing how he should. And that started her cascade of research into the study. And, you know, it's a really fascinating book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a little break for our sponsors here, and we'll be right back.
The Alana Club of Portland is proud to sponsor the Breaking Free podcast. Your recovery, your way, is at the heart of our approach to recovery support services. As the largest and most diversely programmed non-clinical recovery support center in the United States, we've been proudly breaking barriers and forging new pathways for years to ensure everyone has a home in recovery. From peer mentoring to recovery CrossFit, from trauma-informed yoga to mindfulness training, the Alana Club of Portland has a recovery pathway that's right for you. Here at Unity Recovery, we believe recovery should be the expectation, not the exception. Whether you find support with mutual aid, harm reduction, medication, or yoga, your recovery is beautiful and worth celebrating. Learn more and become part of the recovery movement at unityrecovery.org.
All right, so we're back. So, Liv, I'd love to hear what your personal experience has been about the role of shame in your life prior to recovery, in recovery. Yeah, we only have like 30 minutes, so
it's not long enough. I think shame is something that I'm still very much unpacking. You know, and actually in the course of this episode I was thinking, actually, you know, this is like therapy for me. You know, I get these little kind of bursts in my brain.
So many connections.
That makes sense now. And so I think shame for me, gosh, it was so prevalent in my life, but I wasn't aware of it before I got into recovery. So, you know, as a child, I was always shamed for being me. You know, I didn't necessarily fit into my family. You know, I speak a different language. You know, I value things in a different way. You know, I value love and affection and quality time over, you know, achievements in life. And I was shamed for, you know, feeling feeling so disconnected, you know. So for me, the opportunity to connect with was kind of lost. You know, there was a lot of things that went on in my childhood that, you know, were not that different to other people. But, you know, there was divorce, there was new step-parents, there was moving countries, there was substance use, all of this stuff going on, and, you know, blended families. And I lost my voice. So, you know, shame was so prevalent in me, just because I couldn't speak. And when I did, it wasn't received.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't. And, you know, I was very shameful for who I was. I thought that, you know, especially when I grow up with a family of academics, that I wasn't bright enough to be a doctor and, you know, or go to university and all of those things. So I was ashamed in those ways. And then I was also, you know, I felt shame around my weight and body because I was a tall child. And I had a twin too. So I have a twin, a twin brother. So, you know, he grew up really tall and too, but it's viewed differently for women when we grow, and then when we have a growth spurt where we appear to have more, like, you know, what they call it, puppy fat. And, you know, like, I was on a diet at 10 years old. It's just not, you know, so those kinds of triggers led to a lot of feelings of shame. And then reaching out to substance use to make myself feel better, and then felt shame around that. So, yeah, shame was really, really connected to my worth and my value. So when I got into recovery, I uncovered some of that, but then I also felt shame around being a person in recovery. You know, and admitting
needing it,
And then admitting that I had a problem with drugs and alcohol. So it's just this constant process of shame. Whereas now, you know, there is still shame in some areas of my life, especially around dating. You know, like, when you take dating in your late 30s, it's just, oh my God, I know we should do another episode on that. So I can feel some shame around that stuff, because I still carry some of that childhood stuff. It's like, oh, well, I'm not like other people, you know, or I might be rejected because, you know, I'm fat shamed at times, you know. So there's all of that that goes on, and then that can trigger the desire to eat more and, you know, reach out and soothe myself in those ways. So, yeah, there's still shame, but it's not as prevalent as it was before because of the awareness that I've gained in recovery.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you've done a lot of work around it. Like, it's not like, oh, I just, I mean, I've seen you do a lot of work, but you'd already done work when we got to, you know, be friends. And so,
I think I just hadn't made the connection around my body as much that you helped me create that awareness around that.
Thank you.
We should have a bell for you.
Oh, a bell for me. And a bell for you and all your hard work.
What about you?
Oh my gosh. I feel like for me, it actually really started with not feeling like I was accepted as who I was. And, you know, my parents, they were doing the best that they could with what they had, for sure. You know, they were working hard. I always had a safe place, which is more than a lot of people have, in terms of, like, you know, I was fed, there was heat, So I always had all of that. But I definitely felt that I was other. And and actually for me, you said, you know, you spoke a different language. I really resonated with that. And of course, my story is that I found out as an adult that I have a different, my biological father is not the father that raised me. And it's interesting how much, he's a talker. He's a total talker. And I'm a talker. And, you know, my family growing up, it's not like they didn't speak to me, but they aren't really talkers by nature. And it's interesting, like, just that validation of, like, oh, I'm just a talker and they're just not talkers, right? Like, that doesn't mean I'm bad and it doesn't mean they're bad. It just means, like, of course I felt, you know, like, I had to keep my, bite my tongue and be quiet, you know, and it wasn't, anyway, it's an interesting thing. So I think it started with that. And then, you know, I did have kind of an increased desire for food. My mom was definitely all or nothing eating. And so, you know, if she was on a diet, there was definitely, like, sneaking for me I remember one time I had eaten a bowl of ice cream. My mom was off her diet and we had ice cream. I ate a bowl of ice cream and then I went back for seconds. And my dad was like, are you sure that you, you know, want that? And I freaked out. And I was, this was, you know, and I was obviously feeling really sensitive about my body. And I was just like, why do you want me to be anorexic? And I, you know, and he was like horrified and didn't know what to do, you know. But it was a really interesting, that was one of the first times that I kind of spoke up about, I feel really frustrated about food and my body, and I'm feeling shamed about it. And you know, my dad usually didn't say anything, so it was unusual for him. But my mom, you know, it wasn't from a place of, you know, she wasn't trying to be harmful, but from her own kind of disordered, you know, relationship with food. And it was really interesting because I remember like hiding wrappers and all of that, you know, from a very young age and having shame for wanting that, right? And being embarrassed around that I couldn't just eat healthy or that I, you know, was gaining weight. So it was really, you know, looked like kind of numbing. It looked like not feeling good enough. It looked like then as an adult, it looked like, you know, getting sober and still not feeling good enough, right? And still kind of overcompensating for that. So I was still kind of numbing out using food or soothing. I don't like to really say that with food. I like to say soothing or kind of reestablishing safety. But it was using food in a way to try to suppress those feelings, right? Or stay disconnected from my body. And I used overworking and in the sense of like overworking at my job, but also like kind of being an overachiever, or taking care of other people, always kind of trying to validate my worth, right?
Yeah.
So it really showed up in the just really not feeling like I was good enough and really trying to move away from that, like they talked about in that article, and by avoiding it, right, however I could. And then it also looked like trying to make up for it somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it was really interesting how it showed up for me. And it took a long time to even have any idea that that was connected to shame. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the things, so I read all the Brené Brown books and that was really helpful. You know, like she says, hustling for your worth. It was like, oh my gosh, that's what I've been doing this whole time. I've been hustling for my worth. And then JF's.
Yeah, go
ahead. And then JF's book, The Addicted to the Monkey Mind. We've talked about him. Let's give a bell for both Dr. Brown and JF. Yeah. And, you know, just this idea that if someone says something and you take it as like being critical, that it's actually triggering some false belief about yourself a lot of times, right? That blew my mind. And it was just recent that I read that.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm. He's so incredible. So what do we do going forward?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I would say check out all of the resources that we've just talked about. All of them will be in the show notes, of course. And I would say speaking it. I mean, Brené Brown says, you know, speak it,
yeah.
Finding a safe space like you talked about to speak it. Also, for me, it's an increase of awareness. So recognizing if I start having some negative self-talk, if I'm feeling some self-loathing, that there's something underneath that,
yeah.
You know, and so allowing myself to move toward it. That's scary, but it's actually sometimes it's so incredible. I was just having a session with a client yesterday, actually, and you know, she was kind of describing these feelings of shame, and we got underneath it, and it was related to like a good daughter, like I'm not a good daughter if I don't. And I was like, that's so much of a part of what I, you know, experienced, right?
Yeah.
And so, so it's interesting because sometimes we think it's, you know, it's a silly thing that we're thinking or it's really not a big deal. But anytime we're having those kind of triggering thoughts, we want to get really curious about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's that Buddhist saying, isn't it, that the only way out is through.
Totally. And it's so much easier to just avoid, we think.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, as we've talked about, it has such a huge impact on our health.
Yeah.
That it's really not worth it to avoid it, right? Like right now in the moment, I mean, sometimes like you're moving, you know, you just bought a house, you got to write a paper, whatever it is. Like, so obviously today I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm going to sit and examine my shame spiral, right? Because I'm recording a podcast. I have shit to do. But overall, I do make it a priority.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You would start small. You know, if that means sitting down for 5 minutes in the morning and listening to what's going on in your body, then that's a great start. You know, mm-hmm. Or once a week.
Yeah.
You don't have to, like, go in there and... I say this, and it's interesting that our next episode is going to be on self-forgiveness, because the expectation I have of myself is that I'm just going to go right in there, grab it, destroy it, dismantle it, and rework a new live.
Yeah, yeah.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it's not a linear path.
No.
It's also not on our timeline. Like, it's going to happen. It takes time. For sure. All right. Well, I think also, you know, doing the self-forgiveness work, having reasonable expectations, all of that is so important. And we are going to be having episodes on both of those topics coming right up. So be sure to tune into those as well. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Breaking Free Podcast, your recovery, your way. Email us at hello@breakingfreerecovery.com or join our Facebook group, Breaking Free Community.